preparing to record. All right. Good morning. This is our IP note. Just as a reminder, everyone can participate in these calls, but if you want to contribute to any of our community, Credentials community work items, you must be members of the Credentials community group, the W3C, and have a full IPR agreement signed. You have the links to these IP agreements on the agenda that we share with you, but we can drop the links in the chat as well. It's relatively easy. You just need to set up a W3C account that's free and review what we call the Contributor License Agreement, or CLA. Just so you know, the minutes and an audio recording of everything that's said here are going to be archived online in our website. And just to facilitate the conversation, we have the habit of using the chat. By adding Q plus, you'll be put on a queue, and we'll be happy to hear what you have to say. Feel free to also raise your hand if that is how you prefer, what you prefer. All right, that was pretty easy. So I say we move forward with some introduction or reintroductions. We do have a few new faces today, so at this time, please feel free to jump in and quickly introduce yourself. That would be very nice, and you're welcome to do that right now.
Hi, I'm Chandi Kumaranathunga. I work at Arizona State University, and we had a meeting with Simone last week. Pretty excited to join in and contribute if you can.
Thank you, Chandi. Thank you very much. Welcome. Anyone else wants to open the mic and quickly introduce themselves?
Yeah, hi, I'm Philip. I'm from the University of Applied Sciences in Lübeck, Germany. And I'm working in a project together with several other German universities, the universities of Dresden and Aachen. And we have a program where we try to implement the W3C verifiable credentials for vocational training in Germany. So I'm very new.
Thank you. And you're very welcome, Philip. Thank you very much for introducing yourself.
I'd like to hop in and just reintroduce, say hi to everybody. This is Colin Reynolds of Learning Economy Foundation, and just put in a plug for anyone that will be in Barcelona next week for ETH Barcelona. Well, today's conversation, I think, is a great sample of some of the panel discussion and engagements that we're hoping to have with anyone present. So excited to hear the dialogue today, and for anyone will be in Barcelona July 6th to 8th, we will be there as well, and would look forward to connecting with you.
Super, great. Colin gave us also kind of a prompt to jump into the next part of our call, where anyone can feel free to share announcements or reminders, things that are happening in our community that you want everyone in this call to know. So anything else besides ETH Barcelona happening next week? All right, I guess not, but in case, feel free to drop links and stuff in the chat. Great, so I would probably have a sound effect with drum rolls if I could, but not available at the moment. Anyways, today's conversations should be pretty interesting. We wanted to create a safe space to continue to host a chat around very interesting waves that are moving in our ecosystem. Generally speaking, I guess we want to set the tone for this conversation, which is not going to be exhausted today, but make sure that we as W3C, the Credentials Community Group, offer also a space where we could learn about what's happening and share what we've known so far with other members of the extended community. So that's a bit of a premise. And if I were to be a bit more specific in terms of, you know, guidelines, I would say that definitely what we want to do is we want to establish some common ground first. But also from that, we want to lean into what are the frictions point that have emerged so far and do that with an open mind, with a constructive approach. The skill that we would call out here is, humble intelligence. And given that we are really the task force that looks at the education use case, we want to take this as a learning experience for everyone. And so feel free to speak, be generous in your contribution, but also respectful of other people's opinion. I think that's the way forward. So it's really the conversation around soulbound tokens, verifiable credentials, and the ideas that, you know, has fired up and online in the last few weeks that we wanted to go back to. And as there has been probably some leveling up to do in terms of what, you know, we know about soulbound tokens or what is known about verifiable credentials and DIDs, that was just where we wanted to start from. To do that, we thought that we, you know, we reach out to colleagues that are not necessarily part of this work group to share a bit more, you know, what is what was intended with, you know, the concept of soulbound tokens and offer a bit of a primer around this. I was expecting to see a couple of people that are not online yet, but was wondering if there is, you know, anyone here, like in the group, that wants to share, what is, you know, this, you know, if they have a bit of a bearing on soulbound tokens and how they would introduce this concept to the community.
I can jump in here, Simone. That's okay.
Please, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. As I understand it, sorry, I was a little late, so I don't know what all the setup was, but soulbound tokens, as they're kind of conceived of right now, are largely NFT-based. I guess there is a little bit of need for clarity around if people think that soulbound tokens are necessarily NFT-based. They're intended to be have a different way of being transferred. So they're not transferable just all over the place like a regular NFT, but they are a token that is transferable to other accounts based on some other logic, and it's intended to not be transferable to another human, right? So a human might have multiple Ethereum addresses or some other chain addresses, and you only want that soulbound token to be transferred to other accounts or addresses that are mutually controlled by some actor, some human. And the idea here is that these NFTs can contain some amount of data that is about an individual. You've seen there's, you know, good ideas or at least non-offensive ideas, I think, for what type of data might be in a soulbound token, stuff like membership to a DAO or something like that. And then there's other bad ideas, which I think we could talk about, which are the idea that you might put a medical record or a citizenship or something that has PII in it into this NFT. And the whole purpose of this, there's like lots of other kind of ideas that surround this, but one of the big ideas is that now you can bring a piece of your identity and your reputation to some on-chain logic, smart contracts, for instance, to do certain things, right? And it gives us some level of composability. That's how I understand the state of soulbound tokens right now.
Thank you so much, Johnny, for jumping in. Welcome. Is there anyone else that wants to share a sort of their initial take and reflections if they have had an opportunity to read the concept, the first concept paper around SPTs and what was, I'd like to now focus possibly on what are the common grounds, you know, what are the things that, you know, sort of resonate and to people like us that have sort of maybe mostly been dealing with verifiable credentials.
I'm happy to hop in and discuss. Thank you so much, Simona. And thank you also for creating a forum for us to continue this discussion. I think it's been so fruitful thus far. So to recap for those of us who might not have joined us in our most recent conversation, we actually had a wonderful opportunity to discuss with Pooja, the co-author of this paper, her intention and objectives in pursuing this conjecture. So she really articulated her interest in multi-party consent over data that is created by multiple parties in collaboration. So it was really wonderful to learn that she actually shares some of the objectives and interests of those on this call and those who have been working in the identity space for a while, and that actually some of the objectives she was looking to achieve can be successfully achieved using verifiable credentials. So we agreed that there actually might be some better implementation details than those proposed in this initial paper that might be more uniquely well-suited to the objectives that she was seeking to pursue. So it was really wonderful to learn that, you know, not only do we have a shared set of goals, but we also agree that the implementation details discussed might not actually be the best when we think about the, you know, optimal self-custody experience. So I think, you know, there's a lot of ample ground to be explored together. I also think there's an opportunity for us to have a broader, more inclusive conversation that welcomes the Web3 community. A lot of folks look at soulbound tokens as the only way for key holders in the Ethereum ecosystem, let's say, to have non-transferable traits that can interact with on-chain activities. But I think that's just an issue of education, because for most people, they're not aware of the other primitives that are available that this group, you know, leads and is focused on the education space for implementing. So our common ground is vast. I think, you know, the differences in our opinion are much smaller than we might have originally thought. And so what we can welcome in this moment is a practical discussion of implementation. How might we explore these ideas in a manner that preserves the well-being and optimizes for, you know, minimizes harm for end users, helping them to address real challenges that they're facing today with tools that are going to make sense for them in the short term. So, you know, while soulbound tokens do not yet have, you know, a community coalesced spec or that kind of guidance, or interoperability across chains, in the interim, we might be able to explore, some more practical implementations using the specs that we already have, but take into account these new ideas that, you know, that people want to, have non-transferable traits associated with their public addresses in Ethereum that can be composable. So that was a really fruitful discussion, one that I'm really, really glad that we had, because now we can see that, you know, at the end of the day, we are all really, you know, human maximalists in one way or another, trying to solve problems for human beings with these human coordination tools.
Love this corollary. Very much needed, Evan. Thank you for sharing. If there's one thing that I also want to reemphasize that probably speaks to the intent, the original intent of this paper, which was an academic sort of research that was exploring this new space, you know, labeled as decentralized society, of which SBTs were one of the conceptualized primitives. And we've already gone into extending that piece of research, that trigger. And I understand, we understand from Pooja that, you know, beside being able to be like in the lively debate online, she and others are working on factoring in all this new intelligence that we're sharing, that we're providing, into another piece of research, which will be informed by things that we can be saying right now that we can feed to them. So there is actually a door open. This is just, you know, the beginning of this journey. And so it's early also to probably point the finger and just go into that, you know, face-off situation, whereas it feels like we're really just all pointing in the same directions. And the way we use, you know, these primitives and technologies, you know, will be the right way for us to also think about them. And so as we see more implementations of this concept coming to fruition, we'd be happy to provide a space where, you know, those can be shared and discussed. All right, that is kind of my little tease there. We have Mahesh on the queue. So Mahesh, please feel free to open up the mic, maybe just introduce yourself quickly and let us know what you think.
Sure. My name is Mahesh Balan. I'm the founder of Pocket Cred. We've been working in the W3C verifiable credential space for the last few years. Thank you for this opportunity. As I look at SBTs, the one thing that I think the W3C community right here, and the extended community on other application areas has done really well is to give control back to the holder, right? And to me, I can see there are some use cases wherein people want to put something public, like, for example, in a LinkedIn profile. I put the fact that I studied at ASU. But the main question I would have is a protocol involving SBTs should first take the permission of the person who is actually receiving a credential, because that would be my main concern, that somebody does not have a right to put anything about me in a public ledger without my explicit permission. So I see a workflow wherein, you know, it's the classic, issuer-holder interaction. There is a presentation done. I accept. And then that is carried on and, say, posted as an SBT. And as a matter of fact, the NFT could ideally point to a verifiable credential so that document has some value as opposed to just some JSON that is unsigned, right? So there may be a use case right there, but I would love to see the thoughts of this group on how that problem needs to be addressed. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I think Evan may have a thought. So Evan, please go ahead.
I do, and I absolutely would welcome, notes from others in this group as well. I think that you touched on the crucial element here, which is consent. So to the extent that we can better enable individuals to decide the level of publicity and context of publicity of their personally identifiable information, whether that is, you know, in this context, an academic achievement, I think that makes a ton of sense. I think that the granularity of academic achievements is sometimes overlooked when we consider them in a global level. So a diploma versus, you know, achievements in a given course. So for students who are not completing, let's say, you know, 4 years of coursework, for students for whom, you know, keeping track of micro achievements makes sense and is valuable, I actually think that the work of this group leading to, you know, a sort of very well-honed set of schemas and clear set of use cases, takes advantage of the fact that there is no signature scheme on verifiable credentials to create universally legible credentials. So I hear your concern around discoverability, and I would challenge our thought that the only way to make things discoverable is to put them on chain. So to the extent that a user might preserve the clear text privacy of their achievements and avoid negative externalities. So if I put, let's say, a soulbound token on chain with my diploma from Bennett College, you have a high assurance that I am a Black woman. And so there are additional externalities that I've leaked as a result of this credibility. Now, we know, you know, even from the folks at LinkedIn, that a variety of self-attested data is not especially valuable. Especially, you know, at scale, it's becoming an increasing challenge. So I think to the extent that we can allow individuals to accrue signed data from the issuers of these pieces of academic reputation in a form that they can choose to make discoverable in a variety of platforms, whether on-chain or not, I think hashes on-chain make a lot more sense because of the scale and the payload of these credentials. But I would absolutely, you know, welcome suggestions from others on this call who have contemplated this for quite a while, because I know that the concept of on-chain academic attestations was explored by teams like BlockCerts in 2015, 2016, and determined to be suboptimal for this use case, which is why we ended up with the standards that we do have today.
Anyone else has any thought around what Evan shared? I think maybe, Evan, one thought that comes to mind for me is like this whole big issue of consent, right? Which is really, you know, where we land. It feels like it is something that should be addressed, you know, both, let's say, if we want to call out both communities, so the SBT inspired, you know, emerging communities and the, you know, verifiable credentialed ones. It feels like if Pooja is taking on a new piece of research, would this be something that we could sort of feedback to her as, hey, this is kind of a missing piece that needs to be articulated better. And that's where we could find that common ground where maybe we could, you know, inform parts of the work with the implementations that have been occurring already in our space. So if that could be a suggestion, I'm happy. Like this group could also come up with, hey, let's just share. Way. Evan?
So I definitely think that this conversation is building upon the work initially introduced by the Digital Credentials Consortium. So perhaps we might recommend an area of exploration adjacent to this work so that there's a body of existing work and theses upon which we might build. One thing I want us to avoid in this conversation is reiterating research that has already been conducted in this space. So, you know, I know folks like Kalia, like Carrie, like you, Simone, have an incredible wealth of knowledge around this. So to the extent that we might guide our recommendations or requests in the context of information we already have so that we can rely upon that past work, I think that would be super awesome and also could help Pooja be really efficient, making sure that she's not reiterating, experiments or explorations for which we might already have really rich information.
Carrie, go ahead.
Hey there. Yeah, I agree with Evan. And then I think one of the things that, this topic has revealed, which we, I think we already knew, is that we need more documentation and more bridge building, in the world overall, right? We have this like very tech feeling type of, group. And there are those who, you know, don't really understand what is going on here because they're intimidated by that, or they just don't know about it because, we don't get a lot of the attention that, a lot of blockchain type stuff does. Right. While we should, while this work is all very important and some of that work is very relative to this, we have some more work, not just as like co-chairs of this group, but all of the participants in this work to put everything out to the world and to reference this work as much as possible, and to do more research, right? And to get that out there so that folks know that, if they're doing research on, you know, credentials and personal credentials, they know where to find this. Because one thing we found as part of this discussion was that there was very little research done on VCs because they just didn't know. It wasn't really all that findable. I would like to encourage all of us to do more of that. And then another thing, I've been thinking about this quite a bit. And one of the concerns, of course, that I've had about this is that putting anything on a blockchain means that you no longer really have control over it. Right. It is out there. It's in the world. It's permanent. It can't be changed for as long as that blockchain exists. And to me, that's incredibly antithetical to why we want to give people control over their data. We want them to be able to give it and take it back as much as we possibly can do that. So, you know, that's sort of my initial reaction to SBTs, and that's why I kind of really shrugged away to it.
Carrie, just one thing I wanted to highlight there around your concern is that to my knowledge, there have not been ethical frameworks or guardrails put in place to inform the design of SBTs vis-a-vis minimizing harm to human beings. So perhaps something that we might do is recommend frameworks, sets of information, or guidance that we already have around identity systems that might be useful in this context. So one that I might suggest that I talk about a lot is Kim Cameron's 7 Laws of Identity, but would welcome any other recommendations from other folks. I think that this specific point, agreeing on guardrails from which we design or recommend other systems, could be very powerful, but would be very interested in what others have to say, whether we think that might be unduly restrictive.
I like how we are getting practical to some extent. I think this would be a very useful outcome if we could shape some of these recommendations that could inform the future of research. And so we do contribute to this research effort, even if it still is at sort of that academic level, as we were reminded, it is clearly, you know, going to impact or to be turned into something more operational. And I think, again, we just have to maybe humbly share or, you know, make sure that we are efficient in how we disseminate what we know. It may have been at some point, I think, frustrating to not having been acknowledged right away, you know, by this paper, but also there lies the opportunity for us as a community to leverage what's happening right now and to, you know, send those recommendations and make sure that what, you know, we've all been working on gets plugged into, you know, part of, you know, the future, you know, our identity and how we, you know, can really address different angles of the questions. So consent, you know, just really being a principle in how we design new consent mechanics or mechanisms feels like, you know, it's an issue felt across the board. And, you know, there is so much room for research, but also for application. So that is, I guess, one thing that as a group we can reflect on and maybe share with the, you know, with the rest of the community. Although, I guess in this particular task force, we do look at the use cases in education. So digital diplomas and transcript, you know, by way of saying, however, I'm happy for us to take on a different hat around education, which is really informing the public, this community and the others. You know, effectively, that is probably one new task that we can take up in this task force. Johnny, go ahead. Thank you.
Yeah, one couple other things to add some color here, just having been in a few of these conversations when that we should be, I guess, mindful of as we craft a response or a perspective or guidance on this. I think there's mainly two things that I see are the crux of the differences between maybe our community and those that are kind of rallying around this idea of DSOC or decentralized society. And for those that don't know, DSOC was the paper that was written that included a lot about soulbound tokens. And those two things are, one, a philosophical difference. So if you read in the DSOC paper, they're arguing for a different type of privacy framework than what I think our community has traditionally operated under. So one that is less about individual consent and more about this pluralistic idea of privacy. They actually refer to it as plural contextual integrity, based on Helen Nissenbaum's contextual integrity work. So when I've had conversations with Glenn and others about this online, that has been a common retort, is that we have the wrong ideas around privacy, or at least we have a different idea around privacy that they would challenge. And so I think that that's a thing that we would need to engage with. And the other is on-chain logic. So if we, you know, there, the big assumption in the DSOC paper is that on-chain logic, smart contracts, mainly based on Ethereum, will be integrated into our lives and very important for the future in the way that the world works. And so there has to be some way to get identity and reputation information into those contracts, right? And so that is something that they would say is unclear to them, how a verifiable credential that lives off chain can integrate into that logic without putting that data on chain, right? And so if you know anything about how kind of oracles like Chainlink and these things work, the data that is that a smart contract is going to operate on needs to be on the blockchain. And so now this gets into a conversation around ZKPs and you know, encryption and those types of things. And those are all get a little bit technical, but those are going to be the two big, challenges from them, from what I can tell. There's like lots of stuff around the edges, but those are the, that's the crux of the difference here. And so, yeah, I just wanted to put that out there just to, so that we're all on the same page, is that I've seen a lot of conversations around this recently, and it really feels like those are the two impasses right now, between, you know, what we're doing with off purely off-chain DID and VC stuff and what they're proposing for DSOC SBT stuff.
Great. Great insights. Thanks, Johnny, for sharing. I'm wondering if, hey, I see Shrey here with us on the call. Hey, Shrey, would you like to unmute and maybe give us a bit of your perspective? We've had a very, you know, interesting chat a few days back. I think we'd love to hear, I mean, what your take is.
Hey, sorry. I'm in a area where it's hard to talk today. I was planning just to listen, but I will try to get to a space in the next 5 minutes. Maybe in 5 minutes I can talk, if I can come back to me.
Sure. Thanks. No pressure at all, by the way. And thanks for being here. I guess, so Johnny, maybe a question back for you. I've been getting the questions around, you know, for example, I mean, how do VCs work with smart contracts, for example? Is that a good way to frame the question? I mean, is there anything that, you know, we could share back, or, you know, what would be like a quick answer to that if there is a quick answer?
Yeah. So, I mean, just to throw out a fictional use case, just so it makes it a little bit more concrete. I mean, say you have a smart contract that, you only want people to be, and it's a DAO contract, right? And so you can deposit funds for, you know, to govern over, you know, with some group of people, right? And you only want to, only want people to be able to deposit funds into that contract for the DAO if, based on something about their identity. Let's say that they all went to the same university, right? And it's like some, I don't know, graduate alumni fund or something like that, right? You need to be able to prove to that contract, something about yourself, right? And so, a VC can, I mean, there's one way is that you just put the data that is a VC, the structured data, into an NFT wrapper, right? And it's just on the blockchain, and your name and your student ID and the year you graduated and the university and all this stuff is put on in an NFT, and it's issued to you by the address of the university, right? And now that smart contract, when you go to interact with it, can read that. But that involves putting PII on chain, which is something that, you know, we're trying to avoid doing. The other way is to call the contract, and there is a method, at least in Ethereum, called EIP-712. It's a signing method where you can feed structured data, so a JSON LD-based credential, as the payload into the smart contract call. I originally thought that that might be the way in which we could do this, you know, gas concerns aside. But the problem is that Ethereum emits these logs, which anybody with an archive node can rerun the chain and see what that payload was for all time, essentially. And so that's not going to preserve privacy really either. In the paper for DSOC, they propose, okay, well, you know, you can have a pointer to a verifiable credential that sits off chain, but that doesn't really, that might be useful in controlling and interacting with the front ends of these applications that sit in front of the contracts, but the contracts can't read, the data that sits off chain that the NFT is pointing to. So, that is the problem right now. The other, you know, there's other kind of bubbling ideas here around, you can, you know, the zero knowledge proof approach might be the best idea, at least right now. The other way is to kind of, I don't know if you would consider it a hack. It's the ability for you to prove to a front end, whoever controls the smart contract, that you have a VC doing a normal type of like selective disclosure or verifiable presentation to a front end of an application. That front end application then has the keys to be able to write to to the contract and put you on an allow list to be able to call functions on it. And that would avoid you putting a verifiable credential or any PII on the chain. It still contextually leaks some privacy. You can be relatively, anybody who's looking at the chain can be relatively sure that, you have met some conditions, and if they know what those conditions are, like the fact that you went to that university and et cetera, et cetera. If you are listed in the registry for that contract of being able to call functions, well, they know something about your address. They know that you likely went to that university. So you're still leaking, some contextual privacy, you know, things that might be helpful if some actor wants to correlate, you know, some circumstantial evidence around who you are. So yeah, there's all of those types of things to deal with, but that is the difficulty right now in just, you know, you can't walk up to a smart contract right now with a VC and have it, read it.
So would it be safe to say that if we are trying to bridge just the two shores here of the internet, like, you know, Web 2 and Web 3, that what we just talked about is, you know, the ability for VCs to speak to smart contracts is one of the ways that, you know, we can solve, we can build that bridge.
Yeah, I mean, that's an active area of thought and research I know that Evan and I have at Disco. I mean, right now, our immediate use cases and the things that we're trying to solve aren't, don't really require us to interact with smart contracts at that depth. It's fine. Lots of use cases are fine. Just being controlled at the app logic front end level, off chain. But for these ideas of, you know, integrating with DAOs and et cetera, those kind of, you know, this is this utopian ideal of the way that smart contracts are going to operate in our life. Yes. If we can figure out a way that credentials can interact with contracts in a way that is privacy preserving to everybody's, you know, acceptance, right? And there's a way to reconcile. I mean, when I read the paper, I kind of walked away feeling as though the privacy framework that was chosen and kind of, presented was one that would allow for, an easier path towards using identity data with contracts. And so I kind of felt like I don't necessarily accept the privacy framework that they presented in that paper, but I, so there's a philosophical impasse like we were talking about, right? And so, if there is a way to thread that needle, then that would be great, but it's not clear to me, exactly what those steps are to threading that needle.
Great. I think more and more, maybe as a suggestion or maybe as a food for thought for us is, you know, we should start to add to this conversation the contributions of organizations and people that are actively building on it, like you at Disco. One opportunity that we might have maybe in the future, given that we're focusing also our work and supporting the work around the emergence of wallets, maybe we are aware that, you know, Bitcoin is working on their own passport. Maybe if that is where we could meet each other around the wallet conversation, that is an angle through which to look at this, the pluralism here that is happening. I see Kerry's question there. Maybe we want to talk about that too. So, you know, identify who's working to build those bridges and, you know, what are the unintended consequences they've already seen. That feels like could be also a right direction for us. I don't know if anyone has an opinion on this or has a suggestion on who we should invite. All right. Phil, you had a comment. Would you like to open your mic and share that? That feels like it's a kind of good question to reflect on. Or while Phil thinks about that, Kerry, please go ahead.
Sure. I have what I think is probably a pretty naive question for Johnny about talking about this bridging for Evan too, I guess, and anyone else. To me, it seems like it wouldn't be so hard if, you know, we've often talked about anchoring VCs in blockchains, right, where we link to where they could be accessed. But then at the access point, that's where the privacy is controlled. So that if the link is public, the access can be granted or not, and then that data could be accessed by smart contracts. Is that like naive thinking? Is that, am I oversimplifying how that could work?
So yeah, this is, I mean, yeah, there's a little bit of a nuance here where, the VC or a smart contract, an SC, can only read data that is on chain. So it can read the, let's say a pointer, right? So like an IPFS hash or something like that. A VC can see that hash or a URL that is published on chain, but it cannot read from what's at that URL. And so this is why when you look at the way oracles operate, like something like Chainlink, which is often used for types of data that need to be on chain, like, you know, when people try and build like a prediction market, right, for like betting on what the temperature is going to be in New York, right? Chainlink, the way it operates, it has to get that data of what the temperature is on chain so that the smart contract can read it and then execute a payout on the prediction market, for instance, right? And so that means they publish, that's what their service does. It publishes as a trusted source what the temperature was in New York at some given time, right? If you want it, if that's what you want that oracle to do for you. And so that means putting that data in clear text on chain. So that's the issue right now is that yes, we can, you know, putting a VC somewhere on some storage network and then putting a pointer to that, that might be encrypted or permissioned or whatever, into the SBT token on chain might be good for some front end applications, you know, so there's some nuance here. You can show up with your wallet. The front end can read what's in your wallet. And then the front end is much more flexible in how it interacts with data. So it can go try and, you know, call that resource and, you know, you can control privacy, but that's different from actually directly interacting with the on-chain logic, which is what, many of the ideas in that DSOC paper are trying to get at.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thanks for that explanation, Johnny.
Phil, I think he's having big trouble. Mahesh, you had a question there. So let me read that out loud. Yeah, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Johnny, for that explanation. I was wondering, would Chainlink be able to do something like that in terms of just doing a verification and saying yes or no so that you don't, I mean, that can just kind of tries to minimize the amount of information that is disclosed, but also allows the smart contract to say, yes, Mahesh has a valid thing, so now let's move on to the next. He can contribute the money or whatever.
Right. Yeah, I do think that is the, at least – in my mind, right now is the most appealing way to maybe solve this problem. So, you know, right. So you can publish a very minimized version of what it's almost a ZKP, right? Like you could even take it a little bit further and Chainlink, you can prove something to Chainlink. Chainlink is the trusted writer of some data to the chain about something. And so they publish some data on chain for that smart contract to read and in some way that only that contract, knows how to read it. It gets a little bit in the weeds and I don't want to say anything that's, you know, technically incorrect here. But I do think that is at least right now the approach that I'm thinking about the most. I don't know if it needs to be Chainlink. One of the things that I'm really interested in is whether or not you can prove this without having to go through Chainlink. So the user can be their own oracle about this, which would be interesting, but there, you know, it might give you a level of abstraction, you know, kind of privacy, herd privacy, if you're going through Chainlink and Chainlink's writing about a whole set of identities as a service, and putting that data on chain rather than the thing that is being proved on chain coming directly signed from your wallet's public key. And that might actually be beneficial if you go through a service like that for some extra layer of, you know, a buffer in terms of correlability. So yeah, I think there's a lot of little nuances and things here that I think we're just now beginning to dig into.
Simone?
Please. Hello, Phil. Go ahead.
Sorry about that. I've got a layer upon layer of audio issues. It sounds very much like, two communities that have been architecting for different optimizations, with the Web3 community coming out of the original blockchain world and its intention to be as transparent and communicative as possible, while at the same time dealing with peer-to-peer transfer of assets and things in ways that anonymize, at least, or pseudo-anonymize the transactants. Whereas the blockchain world, the verifiable credential world has been very much focused on enabling agency among the individual holders of credentials and raising their ability to express their desires about privacy and such in the same way and at the same plane, if you will, as issuers and relying parties. And so we have these two different philosophical approaches that are coming together, and I'm wondering whether or not the goal isn't necessarily to merge these things, but to find out where they do they intersect in a meaningful way, and or is there a way to route the kinds of transactions that are appropriate for each, perhaps along the line of the previous speaker, so that we are using the architecture that is optimally designed for the intended privacy protections. That's my comment.
Any specific reaction to Phil's comment? Does that make sense? Yeah, I mean, I do. It obviously does to me, and I think Colin was there too. Certainly, the... You know, it feels like we have already covered, you know, part of, you know, this reflections. I wanted to point out a couple of things. One is that we have been trying to curate a bit of a list of resources of reflections on the SPT papers, mostly reactions from community members that were more like VC informed. And we'll make that available again in a more structured way through our website. That's one thing. The other is that, Shrey had reached out, just DM'd me, and he apparently was double booked, but he's working on a piece that he's going to put out, I think, by the end of the week. Shrey works with Glenn, by the way. Glenn was one of the co-authors of the paper, just for context. And he would love, you know, our, reactions to whatever he's working on, and is also happy to jump on a future call to discuss that. So just wanted to share that. I would give it to Colin, who's on the queue. Hey, Colin, what's up?
Hey, I just wanted to kind of echo what Phil said and sort of circle back to a comment that Evan made about sharing research and sharing just and this mindset of curiosity around these two communities sort of intersecting in one way or another. I think there's a lot of sentiment on both sides about what we're trying to do for individuals in terms of credentials and achievements and you know, all the different parts. And I really appreciate people willing to engage in the conversation. You know, as somebody who is curious about things, that's a mantra I've always sort of maintained as an educator and as someone who's still learning, you know, every single day about all of the work behind the VCEDU and beyond, but is, you know, to stay more curious than certain. And I think as these emergent ideas are shared and are starting to be explored, that that attitude is helpful in finding some of the overlap in intersections and also respecting some of the differences and the value that they might add. Because at the end of the day, I think we, at least my view on some of this, and I think many's here share a similar view is that we're trying to empower and enable individuals to have a level of ownership around their identity, around their achievements, around their assertions that is in many ways fundamentally different than the world that I grew up in. And I'm imagining the world that many of you grew up in as well. And so I just wanted to jump in and say that I appreciate the conversation and really want to continue to read and learn and find some of those intersections and would be definitely interested in, you know, architecting or contributing to the conversations around the architecture and the systems for both, because I think they do have unique use cases for both. And the VC world, I've spent more time in the VC world. And again, I think a little bit of a guppy, amongst the community here, but, you know, that there's some frameworks and some content behind that I find uniquely positioned for education. Whereas like SBTs seem like they have the potential application in another space, not saying that those are distinct from each other, but just a couple observations and curious what others think about that as well.
I think the curiosity aspect is one key skills for whoever is, you know, in education or we're talking about education. And probably I think that the DSOC paper and SBTs are connected to education as being a product of research. And even in the research approach, if I'm not completely wrong, I mean, essentially any publication seeks to be proven wrong. I mean, and researchers kind of try to disprove themselves or just go at, you know, articulate in different ways, the findings that are put out. And in a way, I do find that our community is engaging with this academic research effort by signaling what was missed, maybe the research that was not done, in the past, but in a constructive way. And I think we should keep that, constructive approach open. There is an opportunity for us to contribute to that. And maybe rub off that additional visibility that, you know, for better or worse, you know, NFTs and SBTs and Web3 has been having. And I think that will, at the end of the day, be good also for our community. John, hey, what's up? Please.
Hey, Simone.
What is yours?
I was just, you know, listening very carefully to everything here. And there's been this emphasis on, you know, preservation of PII and privacy and control. But, you know, one thing that VCs struggle with is to take types of credentials which you actually want to kind of broadcast publicly. And you're not really that interested in maintaining privacy. The intent of it is to show it off. So a skill or a badge or things like that. You want to be able to make that public, but there are some difficulties, you know, in doing that. With respect to the very nature of what VCs are supposed to control. So, perhaps, you know, some collaboration with, something like, you know, something on chain would be beneficial to, making those types of VCs more accessible publicly.
John, totally want to echo your comment there that composability integrating both on and off-chain proofs is a really exciting opportunity where we've addressed the discoverability of a user, but those traits or those qualifications are not necessarily going to be appropriate. So, for example, in the DAO ecosystem, there are a lot of communities that represent marginalized communities. So it's actually not going to be appropriate for members of an LGBTQIA+ organization in a state where that lifestyle is not legally recognized and supported to publicize their participation in that community. Similarly, for a variety of DAO and decentralized communities that are primarily made of women and non-binary people, it actually ends up being a risk marking their wallets in that way with their gender identity. And so for marginalized communities that are active in the Web3 space that want to be able to take advantage of access control across platforms and accrue their non-financial reputation in a way that's self-sovereign or rather, sorry, self-custodied, I think that verifiable credentials offer all the benefits of discoverability without any of the negative externalities that might be actually very tangible and harmful. We also, you know, talk about this in the context of course, women's health. This data is very, you know, timely. So there's a lot of experimentation going on in this sort of realm where the privacy preservation and consent is actually a moat and not diminishing the usability of these tools. So totally hear you there. And I think this really gets into the specific implementation details that we were talking about earlier. So rather than thinking about, you know, our hypotheticals, like what are the actual credentials for which there is demand and then secondary demand for leveraging. And so in our research at DISCO, we've seen explicitly the DAO communities that do not want to have unfettered secondary markets or necessarily, you know, publicity around their membership wanting to take advantage of these gating capabilities.
Wow. Well said. I think this was another very synthetical way of kind of wrapping things up here. Before we close, I certainly wrote down the interest around, you know, take on, you know, Web 5. Feels like that's a whole topic that we can address in a different call, but definitely there is some element of, I guess, connection there. So let's try to plan another chat about that. I did drop in the chat the links, the temporary links to some of the, you know, reflections that emerge around the SBTs and VCs for now. Feel free to use it. We'll find a way to better curate that. And by all means, add to it if you have something to share. All right. So we are at the hour. Thanks a lot for everyone that made it and for whoever was not here too and is listening to the recording. We look forward to continue on this thread, and we're still kind of debating on what is the best shape to get to this conversation within the wider credentials community group. This is certainly not an issue that is limited to our education use case, but it feels that's a good angle, a safe space in which to turn this into a learning experience for everyone. So thank you very much. And until next time, you'll hear from us in the mailing list.
Thank you all. Thank you, Simone, for hosting this call. Great work.